Welcome to Horror Makes Us Happy, the podcast where we ask the question, what is it about horror that makes us happy? Your hosts are Steve Becker and myself, Chris Whitman, and you can find out more about us at our website, horrormakesushappy.com. Before we get started, this is the trigger warning. This is a horror podcast. We talk about horror things. So we could delve into sensitive subjects that may involve things like violence, harsh language,
adult stuff,
other things like that. It's adult stuff. But there is a possibility that we may delve into darker subjects. So if that's not your cup of tea, maybe have a think about it or go listen to something boring. But if that is your cup of tea, welcome to the show. Steve, what do we got coming up?
Same stuff as always. We host three events on our Discord server weekly. And we've also got, we haven't done the self-promo thing in quite a while. So Chris has got his webcomic Pieces, and I've got my book, A Guide to the Recovery Toolbox. You can find out more about both of those things at our website, again, horrormakesushappy.com. We've got a Linktree link there right on the front page. So you just click on that and it'll take you all the other stuff. But today we are talking to Ms. V. Castro, author best known for her works, Pink Agave Motel, Immortal Pleasures, and Rebel Moon. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. Hi.
Thank you for joining us. Before we get into the meat of the interview, you want to let us know what you're currently working on?
Oh my God. What am I not working on? You know, I'm a full-time writer. So we're always kind of, you know, pivoting, swerving, mm-hmm. Writing new things. And there's always projects, being presented to us. So yeah, currently I'm working on a horror novel about, what happened, a zombie novel, let's just put it that way. I'm also doing a romance novel, but the zombie novel is the big thing. But I'm also doing, finishing up a novella for Sabello Books, run by LP Hernandez and Lucas Marino, which is a great small indie press, good stuff coming out. Yep. And yeah, so there's always, it's just like this revolving door. So anybody who writes full times understands, you know, short stories that come in, working on those, sending them out. I'm really grateful for the work that I have in my life. Really grateful.
Yes. I met LP and Lucas just a couple months ago at AuthorCon.
Oh, we need to get amazing. Them on
here as well. Speaking fantastic of AuthorCon, groups. I think something was announced at AuthorCon that you're a part of. Is that something you can talk about, or
the stand mm-hmm. anthology, which is amazing. I can't believe, like, my luck when I received that email. So, you know, like a lot of us of a certain age, we grew up reading, like, we literally graduated. Well, I did. I graduated from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark to like Kuntz, King, VC Andrews, you know, all this stuff that's pretty much beyond what we should be reading. Mm-hmm. And so when I got like the email, I was like, holy shit. So yeah, so I have a story in an anthology that's dedicated to The Stand. Mm-hmm. And Stephen King, I think he's writing like the introduction and it's got his blessing.
Nice.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I'm super excited. In August is when the book drops, so I'll be doing something fun with Tim Levin, who's also in the book. But it's just one of those things where, you know, you're a kid or you're a young adult, and then you're suddenly playing in the sandbox of your, like an icon. It's crazy. So yeah, that's coming out like in a couple months.
Also, for the audience, so we don't just interview authors, we also interview everybody in, you know, film and all kinds of different areas. And so you're the first guest actually that we've recorded with who's been an author and you're involved with this. So we haven't had an opportunity to talk about it.
Oh, amazing. Ask me whatever.
Well, the interview will be more about your own personal love of the genre, but for the audience, since this is the first chance that we're having to talk about it, the audience may not know about the Stan anthology. And so what V is chatting about here is, do you want to talk about it rather?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it's kind of like a dream project. So Brian Keene and Christopher Golden are the editors, and they were just kind of they were like having a fuck it moment. And they're like, let's just like reach out and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And Stephen King said, yes. So The End of the World as We Know It, which is the name of the book, happened. And a bunch of stories. I mean, so S.A. Cosby's in there, Jonathan Jans, Gabby
Iglesias. And when she says a bunch of stories, she means a bunch.
it is a big ass book. Like, if you're like, oh my God, The Stand's a big book. Oh my God, Game of Thrones is a big book. This is a big ass book. Like, honestly, like,
and that's
doorstop.
I don't know if you were on the panel, but I attended a panel at AuthorCon where they were doing a bunch of signings, and Brian shared that the idea was the Stand itself is a big book. And he said he wanted another book that was equally as big so that they could be put next to each other on a shelf and, be twins, basically.
Well, it sounds like it's slightly even bigger.
Yes.
Yeah, because think about it. There is this like global incident, right? Think about the world right now. There's a global incident. Like, everything shuts down. There's fucking the apocalypse. It would be a big thing from people all over the globe. People all over the world are being affected. How many stories, how many experiences would there be? There would be millions and billions, okay? Yeah. So this book goes beyond the boundaries of The Stand, which I think is amazing. And I love that. And I love how the authors included just can give like different experiences from different countries. So I wrote my story based out of the UK because this is where I live. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do something that mirrored Randall Flagg. So his brutality, his evil, the depravity. But I wanted to do that with like a woman, like, you know, because we're always hearing about women being nurturing and loving and their mothers and they're this and they're that. I was like, what would the female version or a female who was really into Randall Flagg be like? Mm-hmm. What would her depravity look like? How would it manifest? And I wanted to show that because in Stand, you know, Nadine is a bit submissive and she's kind of going on with things. But I wanted kind of this woman who just literally hadn't. Think about it. World society breaks down. There's no morality. There's nothing to stop you from doing what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So if a woman who already has these dark thoughts, these things inside of her, what would that look like? What would you do if no one, if you couldn't be, you know, taken to court? You couldn't know there's no law, there's no order, there's nothing. Yeah. You just do what you want to do. And so I wanted to show that, but with a woman. Mm-hmm. And so going to really dark places. And I loved it. It's really liberating to do that. So like, let me mirror Randall Flagg and his depravity, because I like to think that like women can be just as depraved and they can be just as horrible as men. You know, we like to like dog on men, but women can be just the same. So I want to go beyond the like mother figure, the grandmother figure, the nurturer figure. Mm-hmm. And this story allowed me to do that.
Yeah. Anybody who has lived through middle school. Well, glad to have an opportunity to talk about that and let the audience know.
Yeah.
The theme of this interview, though, is going to be less about your work and more about what you yourself have been a fan of horror. And also some life experience stuff. But that said, it's not meant to be a therapy session. So if there's any questions you don't want to answer, you just say pass and we'll move on.
I'm going to sound cheesy. I'm an open book.
Okay.
Well, starting with childhood, what are some of your earliest memories of scary things?
I mean, because I'm Mexican, like literally we were told about La Lechuza, La Llorona, like the supernatural and the other side was never that far away. It was always there. It was always this vibration behind the vibration. There was always this like feeling of we're in a matrix. You know, look at Dia de los Muertos. Dia de los Muertos is celebrated every year. People put offerings for the loved ones. There's just this energy. And so I've always grown up with this energy of there's something else. There's other things. And I love that. I just can't divorce myself from that. So for me, childhood, like those folk tales, those urban legends of Texas, of where I grew up. So I just recently released from Cemetery Gates Media a YA short story collection called Scary Stories, Tejano Tales to Tell in the Dark, because I love scary stories to tell in the dark. So I wrote this collection for younger readers just to reflect like my experiences. But yeah, it's always been there since the day I was born.
So you mentioned these three things, the Chusa, La Llorona, and Los Muertos. Let's go down the line. What is there any particular memory that stands out to you for La Chusa?
So I grew up like very poor, like extremely poor. And we were living with my grandfather. And South Texas is fucking hot. And so we'd have to open everything up. And I remember looking out, like we had these sliding doors and looking out and there were trees. And I always thought, what the fuck is out there? What the fuck is out there? And it scared me. It really scared me. Like, because so we had this, we lived with my grandfather. It was a house. And then there was a chain link fence that went along the entire block. And then there was Lackland Air Force Base, because my grandfather was in the Air Force, and a huge field and trees. And then you got to the Air Force Base. But there's always this feeling that maybe there was something out there, and I always felt uncomfortable. And I wrote the Queen Cicadas, and I had this experience living in the house where I was just like really little, and I was like kind of playing, and I felt this, I don't know, like, you know, when someone walks in the room or someone's there, you kind of look around, you just feel them. And I looked around and I saw like a man there, and it startled me because it was no one I recognized. And then in an instant it was gone, and I turned back and I was like, shit. What the hell? And then I just went on playing because I was so young. But there were just, I don't know. I think I truly in my heart really believe in kind of that liminal space of here and there, that place that does, we don't know what exists. Mm-hmm. So La Lechusa, I always would look in the trees and think, shit. And I recently at StokerCon, read from Mestiza Blood, and I wrote I read from a short story called Nightmares in Ice, and I used the image of La Lechusa to kind of what's happening with people who are American citizens and who are not. So La Lechusa for me is very important, but also there's that belief that's always been there that there's other things that exist.
So for you, the main thing with La Lechusa is the liminal space?
Yeah, that thing that where there are, and also in my culture, we have things called Nahuals, which are shapeshifters. You have shaman, you have people who can go from one form to another. And it's very real. It's very potent. You know, animals are revealed, nature are revered, and you just feel it. And there's an energy to it, like, wow. Maybe what we think we know is only a fraction of the real story, the whole story. But because we're so programmed to, you know, be born, do well in school, get a good job, have a family, have kids, we kind of forget about the wonders of the world and what else is there, what could be. Getting deep there.
We do that here.
I suspect I think I might know what you like about La Llorona, but let's hear what you have to say about it.
La Llorona, I mean, you know, The Haunting of Alejandra, I wrote during lockdown. My marriage was ending, like it was crumbling, and I had undiagnosed postnatal depression, and I had three kids, and I didn't know who I was, what I wanted, where my life was going. I'd spent so much time being a stay-at-home mom and wife and pleasing everyone and being everything to everyone and giving the most to everyone until I was just like, I don't know who I am. So I wrote this book, and I used La Llorona, who, you know, she committed suicide, but before that she murdered two of her children. I just thought, what would drive a woman to murder her children and herself, and then kill herself.
Yeah.
What would drive someone to commit these crimes? And, you know, I had to dig deep into what I was feeling and what I was going through, and going to therapy, and then writing as a, you know, so cathartic. Mm. But La Llorona is kind of like that when you're lost, when you are at the end of your emotional and mental capacity, where you just can't take anymore. Mm-hmm. You just can't. And I wanted to help other women who might have, or parents, you know, men suffer from mental health. Men suffer just as much as women in certain circumstances. And I wanted to use La Llorona, this ghost, the spirit, mm-hmm. who did really unspeakable things, but also bring in empathy and compassion. So people can say, you know what? I'm not well. I'm really not fucking well. I'm really not. I can't cope. Because a lot of times it's when you have a family or you're a provider and you have to do this, it's easy to push that away mm-hmm. of how you're feeling or what you're doing.
Yeah.
And for me, I wanted to weave the journey of La Llorona into depression and parenthood and family and generational trauma. And for me, it was like the most beautiful thing to do. And I was super excited to finally get it out. But I wrote it during lockdown in a very dark period, and it really helped me.
I could definitely see how it being during the whole lockdown thing that that connects.
Yeah, absolutely. It's isolation, complete isolation.
Well, that too, but also, you know, grief and
absolutely. Feeling
like you're at the end of the rope because yeah. you don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
all that stuff was going on.
Yeah.
Any particular imagery stand out to you for Dia de los Muertos?
Just basically that you're reaching the other side. Mm-hmm. Basically mm-hmm. that you are saying, you know what? There's another realm out there, and our ancestors are important. The people who came before us do influence who we are as people, our journey. And that for me is really important, but also, you know, I'm a practicing witch. So this thinning of the veil, this thinning of worlds, of being able to meditate and to think about your life, reflect, and hopefully call in good things and calling good things for the people around you. The so Day of the Dead for me is reaching back to the ancestors. And for me as a writer now, it's like, well, what can I do that they couldn't do? Mm. What am I saying they couldn't say? How am I existing? How they couldn't exist? You know, as a woman of color, as a Latina, as a mother, you know, I'm doing things that generations ago couldn't do. And I'm so grateful. Right. I'm so, like, it's everything to me to write books. So that's why I'm so grateful I can be on shows and people buy the books, because this is part of me. I feel achieving something they couldn't do.
Hmm. It's definitely a very positive take on that.
No, yeah. Absolutely. I think it's for a lot of people where we have unresolved shit
mm-hmm.
and being able to rectify that or be in touch with that. It's important. It's very important.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that aspect of Dia de los Muertos, how it's more of a positive experience. You know, it's not, it's spooky because it has positive. To do with the dead, but yeah, no, it's more about getting in touch with your yeah. ancestors and those that are on the other side.
Oh, absolutely. And that's such a beautiful, it's absolutely a beautiful thing. Because if you don't know where you come from, you know, where are you going?
Mm-hmm.
What are you trying to learn? What are you trying to accomplish? So for me, that's amazing. That for me, that's incredible. If I can help one person kind of say, you know what, I think I want to achieve this or that. That means a lot to me.
And at this point, we lost audio. So we had to stop recording and start a new session. I thought that I had done a good job of recording something to cover the gap there, but I have apparently failed to do so. So this is your little note here that we're going to pick up here in a second. All right. So grew up Tex-Mex, but did you participate in Halloween, maybe?
Oh, are you joking? My house is like Halloween vomited. It's like Halloween diarrhea.
Nice.
I've literally just bought ghost tea towels for my house. So like little towels, like for my kitchen. Mm-hmm. And I'm holding back. I'm like, bitch, I need a new book deal so I can like, you know, fund my, like TK Maxx is already putting in the Halloween shit. I'm like, I need a new book deal to just buy some shit. I love Halloween. It's so close to Day of the Dead. And yeah, absolutely.
So going back to Halloween, what for childhood, did you have a favorite costume?
I was so poor. Like, we just had to like make costumes. So like one year my mom made me a flapper costume.
Cool.
1 year we were so fucking poor. I know this sounds awful and I don't mean to disrespect anybody, but I went like as a hobo because I just put like a t-shirt and sweats on and I like made a little thing because I had nothing. We had nothing, but I still wanted to trick or treat. But we were so poor, you know, my dad wasn't around. My mom had to work and like, I couldn't afford a costume. I couldn't afford to go buy stuff, but I loved Halloween and I would watch the films and all of it, you know, like just like, and I talked on another panel about this, but I didn't buy books. I couldn't buy books. The only books I had access to were at the school library.
Right.
You know, I grew up, honestly, like, you know, I was a WIC and food stamp kid and the neighborhood I grew up in, like people would at that time, like sell their food stamps for cash. And, you know, my mom did the best she could, but yeah, it was the like Halloween, like all the stuff I do now. Maybe that's why I overcompensate and buy a lot of stuff. Maybe. And is because I couldn't do that when I was younger. I was, you know, I'm so grateful how far I've come.
Yeah.
And, you know, when people buy my books, like you're just allowing me to buy Halloween shit. I'm literally fulfilling a childhood dream. Like I can buy these cute outfits to wear to StokerCon. I can wear all these, I can buy costumes. But when I was growing up, like we were too fucking poor, like for anything really.
Normally we ask a follow-up question of whether or not you had a least favorite costume. I'm guessing the hobo costume was the least favorite.
Bitch, I was just like, give me candy. Like, I carrying, like, literally carrying, you know, not a sack, like a pillowcase.
Yes.
Because that's what I had at hand.
Yeah. It's also traditional. A lot of people did that.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a kid, like, my mom would make me costumes when she could. Like, I was a flapper. I was, you know, whatever. But, you know, oh, here's Gemma. Oh, Gemma Amore is here. Gemma, come here. Come here, Gemma. That was Gemma farting with her mouth. Provider. Also, you know, you know, this is the thing. Like, we are a fucking community.
Yes.
And it's so amazing. Like, the horror people, for me, are the nice community. We come from so many different backgrounds. Like, Gemma's British. She grew up here. I'm American. I grew up in Texas. But we're, like, besties. And we bond over... What I love about horror is all about unity. It doesn't matter what your skin color is. It doesn't matter your religion. It doesn't matter your background. It doesn't matter all these things. We all experience fear. We all experience desperation. We all experience grief. We all experience extreme lust, desire, hunger, all these things that horror delves into.
Yes.
They're universal. It doesn't matter who the fuck you are. It's so unifying. And that's what I love about horror and why I vibe so hard with horror people is that it doesn't matter who you fucking are. Like when you strip down everything, we're just like meat, blood, whatever.
And you're getting very close to the theme of a book I'll be writing soon.
Oh, I think that's why I love, you know, the Hellbound Heart or you know, Hellraiser. Yes. Like literally they are skinless, weird beings and they're just like pleasure and pain. What else is there? Yeah. Like they don't give a fuck. We're about pleasure and pain. That's it.
Yep.
Who are you? You're nobody. You are fucking nobody. You're pleasure or you're pain or you're both. Or I love it.
On a potentially related note, did you have any reoccurring nightmares when you were a kid?
No.
No. Okay. That's just actually
like,
a good
thing. Honestly, actually, the only thing that really like haunted me as a kid was like not having money.
Yeah.
Watching my mom cry, like how she's going to pay the bills, how we're going to live, how we're going to feed ourselves. Mm-hmm. Like that that's horror. That was horror to me. Like, how are we going to live? You know, we had to live with my grandfather. We had no money. We had no home. We had nothing. And that's horror. And I've written about that.
Yeah. Actually, that's the follow-up question. If whether or not you had something terrifying happen in real life that would qualify.
That would definitely qualify.
So, yeah. Gemma, what's the most terrifying thing that's happened to you? Mm-hmm. Gemma's like, no, it's my birthday. He's looking at me. Oh my god! You need to have Gemma Amore on your podcast.
We've already talked to her.
The most terrifying thing. Oh, okay. Terrifying thing has been, I think, every time a man has broken up with me and made me feel like I'm not good enough or I'm not lovable.
Mm. That is. That is definitely a rough one.
Yeah.
So men making me feel unlovable. That's the hardest thing. You guys are like, this is too fucking deep.
How do you respond to that safely?
Sorry. Then I've had men who looked at me and they're like, you are a succubus, aren't you? Like, yeah, bitch. Right? What I just did to you? Yes, I am.
Sorry. No, I was actually in the middle of writing when you said that. That is a difficult topic to address. Obviously, there's a lot of different emotions involved in that, a lot of different 100%. Tools to deal with those emotions. Normally, the follow-up question that we ask to that is, was there ever a moment in your childhood when you felt exceptionally calm or safe or bliss?
Oh my God, I'm going to sound like a fucking train wreck. No.
Actually, no, that's not a very uncommon answer. Yeah, a lot of people are just like, childhood? Bliss?
Yeah.
No, it was terrifying. No,
I'm like a fucking train wreck. Like no, like I, and maybe that's why I have anxious attachment and, you know, like I have this constant search for someone to just love me and be with me and never leave me. Like a fucking, I'm like, where's my Adam? Like Adam's family, where's my Adam Gomez, you know? Where's my Nosferatu? Where's my Nosferatu, bitch? I want Nosferatu. Like, kill everybody with a fucking gang of rats and come get me. I need some 6 foot something man to claim me and like destroy me with rats. And he don't care. Like,
does he have to have the mustache?
I mean, I don't care. It's all in the motion, you know. Yes. I don't care like anything. No. What was the question again?
Whether or not there was a time in your childhood when you felt calm or safe or bliss?
No, never. Yeah. Okay. My dad was in and out, and my mom had to work, and we lived with my grandfather, and I had a stepfather who was really abusive, and I had to leave home at like 18. Because I just couldn't. I just couldn't. So that's why I ended up stripping. Because like I finished high school, went to college, had a small, a small little scholarship. And then I got to the point where I had no fucking money. And I just had to strip. I had to make the money. Because it was like, even if I stopped school, I'd still have
rent,
student loans. Yeah, I still have student loans to pay back. So I was like, I might as well just like pay the money. Oh, keep going. And it's a status thing. It's like, well, if I don't have a degree, would make me this, would make me that. I wouldn't just be some fucking throwaway brown girl who didn't do shit with her life.
Right.
I had to make it happen. And that's why for me, it's really important to support other writers, support other women of color, support other women, and just like keep going. Even when I get knocked down, I get back up. But my childhood's fucked. My childhood's fucked. I'm fucked up. How many horror writers are?
So that's part of why we're doing this. So we've got three sort of goals with our podcast. The first one, short term, medium term, long term. Yeah. The short term goal is that fans of yours will maybe get to hear you share something you haven't shared somewhere else.
Thank you.
The medium term goal is that we don't shy away from difficult topics. And so maybe somebody in our audience will get to hear us talk about something that they've experienced in a way that is at least, you know, healthy or respectful. And you might need to hear that. And then the long term goal is not everybody falls into the same bucket in terms of what they love or what they're afraid of.
Yeah, absolutely.
And identifying or starting to identify you know, common trends. How many buckets are there? What are the buckets? Which ones are most common, least common, that kind of thing. So, and that's kind of what you were touching on a minute ago that I said, I'm going to be writing a book soon. We've just done our fifth anniversary. And so we've talked to a little over 100 people, and I'm going to start tallying up those kind of results and sharing what we've started to see so far. I forgot to mention, or I forgot to ask earlier, was there anybody else in your family who was a fan of horror when you were a kid, or was it just you?
Well, no, we all talked about these scary stories, urban legends, folklore, you know, Mexican folklore. My mom is the one who really introduced me to, like, aliens, who introduced me to horror films. And again, then, you know, it turned to the point where she had to work. My dad wasn't around. My grandfather did his thing. And I would just, like, sit there, like, kind of, like, skimming through the channels and watching things. But my mom was, like, the first point of contact with horror. Mm-hmm. And, again, you know, being a kid where I was on my own a lot, it was either library or the TV and what was offered. I didn't have a lot when it came to anything else. Again, you know, that's life. I'm not a victim. I don't hold it against, like, this is a fucking journey. Like, we are on journeys. Our souls are on journeys. And that was what I need to experience. So now I have a choice. I have a choice to kind of embrace those things, reflect on them, and do other things. So when I write a book, when I write a horror story, I definitely think about it very carefully. And but before that, I'm so grateful that I get that opportunity. But yeah, it's, I just love horror. I just love the way it can go into all these different directions. Same with science fiction. So,
yeah.
Some of the guests that we've talked to, I mentioned, you know, there's a couple different ways that this can play out. Some of our guests were horror fans from the get-go, like enjoyment and excitement. Some people, they were afraid. And then there's like a dividing line where after that dividing line, they now love it and they're fans of it.
Yeah.
Some people, it was a mixture of both fear and love at the same time for the whole thing. What was it like for you?
1,000%. I loved it. It made me feel seen. It made me feel comfortable. It soothed something inside of me. Horror and storytelling in general has always been something that I've embraced and I've loved. But I think because, you know, when you have indigenous roots, when you come from a culture where the oral tradition is very strong, you get that feeling. You just get that vibe. You love it. You love storytelling. You either love storytelling or you don't. And I've always loved it. I've always loved it from the time I can remember.
Yeah.
When you said that horror made you feel seen, what did you mean by that?
So for me, you know, like I said, like, I had this encounter with this person. They're like, oh my God, I see a little something in your eye. He looked at me and he was like, you are so primal. There's a demon in there. There's something inside you. Like, you change. And for me, horror is a full expression. For me, writing a horror story or sci-fi horror is full expression of who I really am. True authenticity. And I think in modern society, authenticity is lost. People want to be loved, adored, and all of these things without being their authentic selves, because they're so afraid of rejection. And for me, authenticity is what draws my readers to me. Authenticity is what has grown my kind of reach. And I feel a responsibility to, like, touch those people, to be there for them. But yeah, I mean, horror for me is just, it feels natural. It's an appendage. Same with science fiction. You know, I write romance and horror romance, and I'm really into erotica and erotic horror. They're tied, and I love it. But when someone looks at me and says, oh my God, you are a fucking demon, I can see it in your eye, and they're like face to face, I'm like, wow, yeah, thank you.
So actually, I want to clarify something. A minute ago, you had said something about a man saying that to you, but it sounded like you were referring to something you shared earlier. You had said when you were a kid, there was a moment where you looked in a particular, I think like out in your yard or something like that, and you thought you saw a man, and then you looked away and looked back and they weren't there. Is that the same person that looked in your eye?
No. This was someone I was intimate with.
Okay. Sorry.
No, like someone who was like with me in the flesh and was just like, holy shit, girl. What are you? Are you even from this planet? And I'm like, well, did I take you somewhere else?
Nice.
Exactly.
So the next two questions we're going to ask as a pair. Yeah. Because we're going to start with the negative one so we can end on the positive one.
Yeah, absolutely.
The first one is, do you remember the first person you hurt?
The first person I hurt would probably be my dad.
Okay.
Because he was such a fucking shitbag and he was never there. And I just had to like extricate myself. I just had to leave him.
Mm-hmm. But how did that?
Because he wasn't there, because he was with a different woman all the time, or he was on drugs, or he just wasn't fucking there for me. And I know, and to this day, I know I hurt him because I just, but it's like, what do I owe you? I don't fucking owe you anything. Like, if you're not there for me. So the first person I hurt would have to be my dad, because he just wasn't there and I had to pull back.
How did it hurt him?
Well, he's had three children. I'm the only one that talked to him.
I mean, did you have an argument with him and yell at him and leave kind of thing?
No, I'm that bitch. I am that bitch. I don't scream. I don't yell. I don't beg. I don't cry.
I guess what I'm trying.
You don't want me? I walk away. And I just had to walk away from him because he wanted so much from me, but he gave me so little in my life.
I guess that's what I'm trying to clarify is because if he was such a shitbag, and you standing up for yourself and leaving, and him maybe claiming that hurt him, or like,
Yeah, he said it hurt him. But the fact is, that's not on me. That's on you.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
You abandoned me. Yeah, exactly. I was like, you abandoned me. So whatever hurt you feel is on you.
It's potentially maybe he didn't really feel any pain and he was just trying to use that to manipulate you to get you to come back.
And for me, I don't do that. Same with men who come in and out of my life. Like, if you don't show up and you give me, I give 1,000%. If you're not matching my energy, fuck off. I don't entertain shit. And it took me a long time to get there, but my dad was never there. Mm. And so it took a long time to reclaim that. A lot of therapy, a lot of writing.
So writing is therapy.
If y'all want the tea, you better buy The Haunting of Alejandra. Okay. And if you want the spicy, you know, demon shit, then you need to buy my erotic horror because, you know, you get it all.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you got out of there first. So the follow-up question is, do you remember the first person you helped?
Oh, my mom.
Okay.
So I'm 10 years older than my sister. Mm-hmm. Sisters. My mom needed help. I changed diapers. I cooked. I cleaned. I did everything as a mom. I was her helper. I was her nanny. I was everything. Mm. And that's why I left for Philadelphia and then had to be a stripper because I got to 19. I was like, I can't do this anymore because I helped my mom in every way. Mm. And it just got too much. Cause like I'm 16. I have a job. I have to go to school. I help cook. I clean. I watch the kids. I do all these things. And I'm 16 fucking years old. It's just like, fuck. And then it got to a point where I'm like, I meet this older dude. He's like, you should go there. I'm like, okay, I leave. I go. I got a small scholarship. I just had to leave my house. And now me and my sister Jade, we're 10 years apart. We are close as fuck. We are close as fuck. And I like changed her diapers and we had this amazing connection. But to get to there, like the pain, the journey, you know, God like I don't believe in God in the typical sense, but like fucking something got me through that. But yeah, helping my mom, that was just something I was meant, I had to do, but maybe it's a cultural thing, you know? The oldest girl in a Latina, in like a Mexican household, you have so much responsibility.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I was like, fuck this shit. I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm going to die doing this.
Oldest kids in general get a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But potentially more so in a Latina family. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I'm so grateful for all the books I've written, all the books that, you know, people buy and they share on social media. I am so fucking grateful because I never thought that my life would take this trajectory. I never thought I would be being flown to LA. I didn't think I'd be living in the UK. I didn't think any of these things. But the fact that, you know, I endured so much shit and I kept myself open and soft, you know, my greatest desire is that I meet the right partner who's going to be with me and appreciate these things. That's up there. But, you know, like, it's been a fucking road. It's been a fucking road. I remember I was in LA and, you know, I'm pitching and then I meet in the same day Zack Snyder and Eva Longoria. And I'm like, what the fuck is my life? I'm like, what the fuck is my life?
Right? Like, how did I get here? This is awesome.
Yeah. It's amazing. I've written a book for aliens. Like, what the fuck is my life?
Right.
But honestly, yeah. In my core, I'm so fucking humbled. I'm so grateful. And all the shit I've endured, I think, you know what? Universe isn't going to let me down. Mm-hmm. My mom loves me. We had it out. My sisters love me. You know, I travel. I get paid to speak. I get paid to travel. I get paid to do things. I am so open to everything. And I'm just like, wow, thank you. I'm real scatty. Sorry I was late for this. Like, you know. No, it's okay.
Quite all right.
So a lot of our guests have reported they were fans of horror in their childhood years. And then some guests continued that fandom through their teen years into their adult years.
Yeah.
Other guests, they kind of drift away from it in their teen years because they're focusing on other things and then they come back to it in their adult years. Which was it for you?
Oh, I have been a horror sci-fi genre bitch from day one. Like, I am a stan.
Sounds like it.
I am like a stan. Like, literally, like I am so into genre, like, since the day I was, like, born. So I'm always into it. I've always been, it's just been something. So I have, like, photos and pictures of things I've written when I was really little, and I have them, like, tucked away. Like, so grateful. Like, this is always since the day one.
Cool. In terms of media in your teen years, is there anything that stands out for you, you know, top two or three things that really stood out to you from your teen years?
The Exorcist, Nightmare on Elm Street, Anne Rice. Mm-hmm. Like, Anne Rice was just like my jam. So, like, I went from, like I said earlier, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Then I jumped to, like, Dean Koontz, Stephen King, Anne Rice, V.C. Andrews. Like, I like it, the whole thing. Okay. And like all of it.
Usually the first things that come to mind for a reason. So what did you like about The Exorcist?
I love the fact that because being Chicana, being a Latina, it wasn't that far of a stretch for me to mentally know that an entity could come in and take in control. I loved just like the depravity of how dark it was. I loved all of it. The Exorcist for me is just about innocence lost. Okay. You know, she's a single mom. She has this daughter. She's not really there for her, but innocence lost. But also this priest who's grappling with grief. But also, like, I find the priesthood and celibacy. I think celibacy is like the fucking dumbest thing I've ever heard of. Like, why would you be celibate? That's like so counterintuitive to your nature. Of course, you're going to be fucked up if you're celibate. Mm. You're backed up. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's true.
Figure shit out. But for me, The Exorcist just took fear to another level.
Okay.
Mm. And I mean, but also because I write a lot of erotic horror and I write a lot of vampire stuff. When I watch Fright Night, Lost Boys, any of these, like Bram Stoker's Dracula, Nosferatu, the original one, there's something there. I love it. I just
so
can't.
So that kind of ties in with Anne Rice, which you also mentioned earlier.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Anything in particular stand out to you from her work?
I mean, Interview with the Vampire, Queen of the Damned.
But as a fan of Interview with a Vampire, for example, what were the elements of Interview that you liked?
All of it. I just loved all of it. I love just like the history and like the sweeping kind of, it's just like the emotion and just, it's just like a blanket. I love it. A blanket of blood and sensuality.
I like that. I'm stealing that quote.
What about Nightmare on Elm Street?
Oh, just like, it's just like a slasher. It's just like fucking entertaining. Like this crazy guy that you've got to defeat, but it's so primal. Everybody has to sleep. You have to sleep. How do you not sleep? You can't. Right. How do you, like, it is just this impossible task.
And it's kind of on the same line as body horror. You know, it's one of those things. It's just built in. So it's so visceral and terrifying because there's no escape from it. You can't escape your own body. You can't escape the fact that you have to sleep.
1,000%.
Unless you take lots of drugs, maybe.
Oh, exactly. It doesn't.
Let's see. Was there ever a time in your teenage years when you felt exceptionally calm or safe or bliss?
Yeah.
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Again, not an uncommon answer. Teenage years kind of suck. A little bit of anxiety.
No. I mean, I was like 15, 14, and I had like 40-year-old men wanting to.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not a good time.
You know, and then I had 40-year-old men who wanted it, and then I had boys my age who didn't.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah.
It was that kind of experience.
I'm thinking that the teenage boys are probably too chicken shit. That's all.
Probably. Yeah, that's then they weren't for me.
Well, right. Yeah. So rolling into adult years now, in terms of, you know, media that you were a fan of, what stands out to you in your adult years?
All of it. Like literally, like all of the horror films that came out, like all the media. I remember reading like The Passage, and I remember reading, you know, The Hunger Games. I remember reading all these books. I'm thinking, why are there not like any Latinas doing this shit? Mm-hmm. And that was what pushed me. But also, I was really miserable, so I just started writing. But like, you know, what, like looking at Twilight, all those things, they just kind of spurred me to like, let me do something different. Let me do something amazing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, I'm one of these people that I can watch fucking like this Shining 20 times. But obviously, if new things come out like Nosferatu, Sinners, I'm going to watch them. Megan, I'm going to watch them. But there are those core things when you're young that just stick with you, like The Shining. Every time I watch it, I get something new out of it.
The
primary thing that stands out to me for The Shining would be, you know, potentially this, you know, liminal space in between worlds kind of thing. But is that the main thing that stands out to you from that? Or is there something else?
Well, just the relationship between her and this obviously toxic, abusive man, being a mother, and also, you know, having, you know, this kid who has a superpower. So all of it just kind of, but also this hotel that's built on indigenous land, stolen land. Mm-hmm. Like, you get what you fucking, you get what you're asking for, buddy. But, you know,
the words of Joaquin Phoenix, you get what you fucking deserve.
Yeah, I mean, but all of it, I just love it. I love The Shining, the film. It is so good to me. I just, everything about it is magic.
When you mentioned The Passage, you had said, you know, why aren't, you know, Latinas doing this? Aside from the, you know, representation, was there something about The Passage you did like?
Yeah, but in general, I've always been a fan of vampires. I've always been a fan of genre fiction. So for me, I was like, well, I don't see what I want to read. I'm going to write it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been so grateful that publishers have just kind of gone with it. So, yeah, the passage was like, I don't need another person of the same type of demographic writing the same damn thing over and over again. Even though I love the book, I love Salem's Lot. I love Anne Rice. But I wanted to write it in my way. And I want to expand the lore.
Yeah, I see the vampires, you know, aspect tying into a number of the different things that we've already talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. Expanding the lore to me is so incredible because as a writer, that's what you want to do. You want to be stimulated. Mm-hmm. You want to be stimulated emotionally, mentally, physically, but also reach out and touch your readers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of like general topics, like we've talked about, you know, love and power dynamics and sensuality and, you know, all kinds of different stuff. And vampires kind of touch on all of those things, really.
Oh, yeah.
That or succubi. Yeah.
That too.
Which you've been accused of being.
I've been called that.
That's why he brought it up.
I've been called that. I don't care.
I would take it as a compliment. I mean, that's not an insult.
Oh, of course I am. I'm just like, hell yes, I am. Mm. Any man does it. That doesn't think I am, I'm gonna swipe left.
So has there been anything in your adult life that has terrified you?
In real life?
Yeah, in real life. Apps. I mean, baby taking
apps? Dating apps.
Oh, dating apps.
Dating apps are literally, oh, fuck off.
that's a dangerous pool to step into, yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows?
That's pretty much.
Could just be is. From the spectrum of just an asshole to guy with a van with no windows, you know?
Like, it's exactly. Dangerous. And then we're like living in the black phone.
What I'm hearing is the unknown.
The unknown. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Flipping it around. Anything in your adult life that has been, you know, moments of being calm or safe or bliss?
My kids.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah. They ground me.
They love supposed to be me. The other way around. You're supposed to ground them.
Right.
They ground me. They love me unconditionally. So for me, yeah, it's absolutely one of those things where I, you know, being a mom and writing, it's just natural. It's good. I'm grateful.
Okay. All right. So these next two questions are not just going to be about horror. Could be about any genre.
Yeah.
And could be they're over your entire life, not just any one section.
Yeah.
What movie would you say you have seen more times than any other?
Probably The Lost Boys.
Okay.
And Urban Cowboy.
Okay. Well, The Lost Boys kind of ties in with things we've already talked about. What about Urban Cowboy?
Oh, so I'm from Texas, so you know I like a cowboy. I like a cowboy. I like, you know, country music.
All right.
Yeah.
Would you say that one of those two movies is your favorite movie, or would you say something else is?
You know, obviously, I love vampires. That's what I write. That's my bread and butter. Okay. But Urban Cowboy, just like the romance. So, you know, I've gotten more into romancy and kind of that whole thing. So that's been a big thing. And I'm really grateful that people have responded to it.
Do you see any common themes about what kind of horror you like? Cannibalism, cults, metaphysical?
Oh, I love it all. I've written cannibalism. I've written vampire. I've written zombie. I've written it all because I feel like horror is an opportunity to delve deep into really complicated human emotions. Mm-hmm. So when we can't fully talk about them, we write horror. We write stories. So for me, yeah, every like dark corner of horror is an opportunity to talk about being human at its core.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say vampires because that does seem to be a common thread that keeps cropping up.
Oh, I love it all. I mean, my work in progress is a zombie book. So,
okay. So this is the point in the call where we would talk about like try to identify any common themes that have cropped up multiple times on the call and then spend a little time talking about why those are important to you. For you, it's kind of interesting. So I see sort of three things, mm-hmm. as, and then there's a, one larger umbrella above those three things.
Yeah.
The three things that I see are love, depression, and liminal space.
Yeah.
All of those have come up multiple times. And like, obviously, love and the depression are kind of opposite ends of the spectrum. And then the liminal space is almost like what's in the middle.
Yeah.
And then the umbrella that's over all of this is affirming life.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, there's joy and struggle in these three things, but really it's about affirming life, because if you didn't affirm life, you wouldn't have any of these things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the first follow-up question would be, do you have any idea why affirmation of life is important to you?
Because when you give up on life, nothing exists. Right. And for me, we're here to live. We've been gifted the gift of living. Being alive is a gift. Having children is a gift. If you want it, you know, it's a complete choice. But being alive is a gift. Mm-hmm. Having health is a gift. Having a long life is a gift. And so for me, being alive is an opportunity to fulfill something either your past life couldn't fulfill or your ancestors. Mm-hmm. And for me, like when I see Stephen Graham Jones, my God, he's a fucking gift to us all.
I like what you said about fulfilling things your ancestors couldn't, because you brought that up earlier in the call too.
Yeah.
So now the follow-up to this is, now that we've identified why these things are important to you, why horror, couldn't you explore these things in other genres?
No, you can't. There are certain things that can't be explored in other genres. For like, I write romance. Mm-hmm. And when you, and this is the thing, I specifically say to everyone, there's a huge difference between writing and publishing.
Okay.
And when you write a book, okay, great, you write a book. But if you want it published, there is very strict parameters. So I'm writing a romance novel now, it has to end a certain way. There has to be certain beats that have to be fulfilled. What I like about horror, the beats that I feel deep down that are like dark and crazy, horror fulfills. You know, I can't do certain things in romance that I would do with horror or sci-fi. So, yeah, you can write whatever the hell you want, but if you want to publish it and you want people to buy it, you've got to hit certain beats.
Mm. So you mentioned the horror hits certain beats that fulfill you. What are those beats?
Oh, fuck. are you my shrink?
Maybe.
Just like sorrow, hurt, disappointment, abandonment, my abandonment wounds, grief, sorrow, lust, extreme lust, desire,
more hunger, lust. Sorry.
Like, this insane, like, you just read the Pink of Goblin Motel and I don't need to say what it would be. You read the Pink of Goblin Motel, it could be categorized in Pornhub very easily. So, you know, there are things that you can't do in certain genres that you can in horror.
Do you tend to, how can I say this? I want to say wrap things up, but that's not really the word I'm looking for, because you can find resolution. I'm really struggling with the words on this. You know, for some people, the word resolution means everything ends well. That's not necessarily the case. You know what I'm saying?
It doesn't matter. Like, the story's going to end how it's going to end.
Right.
Period. In any sort. It's going to end how it's going to end.
And so do you find some affirmation in... I want to say, do you find affirmation in the story ending? But again, I feel like the implication there is that it ends in a happy way. That doesn't necessarily mean I don't necessarily mean in the happy way, but do you find resolution in the fact that the story ends at all? You know what I'm saying? I don't know if I'm wording this very
honestly,
well.
Honestly, I don't care. The story ends really? Where it ends. Like when my brain stops, it stops. For me, the creative process is quite natural and definitive. I'm a pantser.
No, that's actually a really interesting way of looking at it that I hadn't really considered. I don't care where the story ends, just that it ends.
Yeah. Hmm. When it happens, okay. It happens. It's just there.
That's sort of a Zen way of looking at it, for lack of a better way to say it.
Absolutely.
Just remember, wherever you go,
there
you are. It's not really Zen. That's more Doug Adams, but you know.
Right. So just a few last few questions here. Do you think this is a good summary of what you get out of Horror, or do you think that there's something else that's more accurate? Like, did we miss the mark, or did we leave something out?
This has been amazing. Perfect. Fucking perfect. I love it. I've had a great time. Thank you for bearing with me with all the bullshit.
Same.
And I'm on like my fourth Prosecco. Hey. Yes.
I'm glad that we, you know, today we learned that Zencastr has an option for recording from iOS phones, which I didn't know until today.
Didn't know that before. Yeah. It's good to know. We've had a lot of guests that are their only option is an iPhone.
Yeah.
Well, now you know.
Last question. Is there anything you thought of earlier in the call that you didn't get a chance to say? Maybe the conversation took a left turn.
Buy my books.
There you go.
That is the wrap up. Yes.
So I can keep writing.
Yes. And before we hit the closing, do you want to remind people what you're currently working on?
Hey, a bunch of shit. But the most important the most important thing is that you go and just buy what's already out there.
Okay.
You buying what's already online makes such a difference to me as a writer. Thank you so much. And also follow me on Instagram, Be Latina London, Blue Sky.
So for this, we're going to get together with you after and we'll get all your links, and we're going to create a bio page on our website.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you, boys.
You're welcome. So everybody can just come to horrormixeshappy.com, go to the episodes page, look for V Castro, and then go from there. Perfect. So again, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Love it. I've had such a fun time chatting.
So have we.
Even with the fucking toilet. being in the background. All y'all,
are you right next to the bathroom?
I'm drinking. It's Gemma War's birthday. I totally my mind got a last
happy birthday, minute Gemma
thing. Exactly. Got a last minute invitation, and it was like all hell broke loose. Literally, hell.
Sometimes days go like that, you know? Everything is calm, and then all of a sudden, at a certain hour of the day, it's like five things at once now.
Exactly. Yes. Fuck yes. So thank you, everyone.
Well, again, thank you. Thank you, everybody out there listening.
Take care, guys. Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate your support. I love you.
Thank you.
And to everybody else out there, come follow us at horrormakesushappy.com. We've got a link there with all the guests that we've interviewed on the episodes page. And our Linktree page and our Discord link is on there. That just follow all the stuff and tell a friend.
Yeah.